Jeremiah chapter 24. After Jehoiachin, son of Jehoiakim, I didn't name these people, king of Judah, and the officials and the skilled workers and the artisans of Judah were carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Lord showed me two baskets of figs placed in front of the temple of the Lord. One basket had very good figs, like those ripened early, and the other had very bad figs, so bad that they could not be eaten. Then the Lord asked me, "What do you see, Jeremiah?" "Figs," I answered. "The good ones are very good, but the bad ones are so bad they cannot be eaten." The word of the Lord came to me, "This is what the Lord God of Israel says. Like these good figs, I regard as good as the good exiles from Judah, whom I sent away from this place to the land of the Babylonians. My eyes will watch over them for their good, and I will bring them back to this land, and I will build them up and not tear them down. I will plant them and not uproot them. I will give them a heart to know me, then I am the Lord. They will be my people, and I will be their God. For they will return to me with all their heart. But like the bad figs, which are so bad they cannot be eaten, says the Lord, so I will deal with Zedekiah, the king of Judah, his officials, and the survivors from Jerusalem. Whether they remain in this land or live in Egypt, I will make them an abhorrent and an offense to all the kingdoms of the earth, and reproach them by word, a curse, and the object of ridicule. Wherever I banish them, I will send the sword and famine and plague against them until they are destroyed from the land I gave to them and their ancestors." As we read chapter 24 of Jeremiah, the first thing that you need to realize is Babylon has arrived. Today's verses start off with the first people of Judah being carried off into exile by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. This is the beginning of the end for the nation of Judah. The unthinkable is about to happen. God has allowed his people to become slaves to the worldly system. Imagine that. Their land, well, it's going to gradually be overrun with pagans, which maybe that's not such a change because they had become very paganistic in their way that they were worshiping God. They were worshiping their God and everybody else's that they could find. They will become subjects to the rule of an earthly king not from the lineage of David. This is a new experience for them. I mean, they had always been there, and you know, God had told them that David's throne would never die, and I got a feeling that as those armies that they kept thinking God was going to spare them from amassed, and as they began to invade, and they began to fall, and they began to be carried away, I know exactly what I would have asked God. How could this be? God, how could you do this to us? God, you said you loved me. I mean, this is our land. You gave it to us. You promised us. I got a feeling they quoted every scripture they could think of, trying to convince God. Not supposed to happen this way, God. And isn't that sort of our tendency? When the consequences of our sin come calling, what do we try to do? We try to remind God just how good I am. When I have to deal with the consequences of the situations that I created, all of a sudden now I want God to understand, God, I'm not such a bad person. God, you promised. Have you ever said those words to God before? Lord, you promised. And inevitably you quote some little scripture. And the reality is, Judah should have known this day was coming. I mean, after all, it had only been 100 years, but they had already watched their fellow Israelites carried off into captivity by Assyria. And God had sent them messengers. Jeremiah is the last call. He ain't the first call. They had other messengers come to them and say, tear down the high places. Stop chasing after the other gods. turn yourself back toward God. And all of the messengers, they didn't listen. But you know what? One thing now, God's got their attention at this moment, because now they're being drugged, kicking, and screaming off into captivity. Now, the last few weeks that we've been doing Jeremiah, we started this back at the first of the year, and I know these haven't necessarily been fun, but I hope they have been challenging. And if you're just catching on to the story, let me catch you up how we got to where we are. We took a look at the two sins of Judah. You're thinking, two? Yeah, there were only two. At least only two that God was concerned about. He was concerned about the fact that they walked away from him and they walked toward the world. And all the other sins that we have in our life stem off of those two, the fact that we are walking away from God and toward something else. Then God began showing us visions of our faith, what it means to have living faith. And well, Jeremiah has been very busy. He went on a shopping spree, and he had to buy a belt. And of course, as he had to bury the belt and retrieve the belt, we discussed what it meant to have unused faith. Then he had to take a field trip to the potter's house and watch this guy making all of these clay pots, and we began to discuss how we get our faith misshaped. And then, well, last week we had the flower pot that I did not throw on the ground and break here in the sanctuary, but we did have a broken one, and we talked about the idea of our busted faith. And all of this is bringing us to a point that, what's all this about? I mean, this is depressing. But I have some good news for you. We're only through chapter 24. And Jeremiah is 52 chapters long. And that's good news for us, not so much good news for Israel, because their fall is going to be painstakingly slow. God's not going to just come in and wipe them out. They're going to watch their land nibbled and taken bit by bit, piece by piece, one battle at a time. This section will fall, and then that section will fall, and they're going to be huddled in Jerusalem, and they're just going to watch it all start falling apart. That means the back half of the book of Jeremiah, well, the judgment has arrived. So we're going to stop talking so much about judgment, and God is going to turn his attention to redemption. I mean, we're about to break this vessel into so many pieces that nobody can put it back together. Lord, what's your point? Are you going to abandon us? Well, no. God's not done with Israel. And that's good news, because in spite of all the things they had done and all of the other gods that they had worshipped, and the fact that they had sacrificed their kids to foreign gods, literally, God is still interested in a relationship with them. Doesn't that blow your mind? I mean, if somebody treated me like that, I would probably show them the door and say, never come back. Go away. But God says, you know what? I'm still interested. I still want you. And that's good news for me, because of all the things they've done, God still wants them. And you know what that means? God still wants a relationship with me too. But for that relationship to happen, the people of God, Israel in the past, and the church in the here and now, are going to have to listen to the voice of the messenger. I have good news for you. I'm not the messenger. We're going to let Jeremiah play that role. And just so you also know, some will. There will be some that take these messages and say, you know what? I got to work on this faith thing a little bit. But most will not, and they'll do things the way that they've always done them, and they'll keep asking the same questions. God, where'd you go? And God's going to give you the same answer. Nowhere. I'm right here. Where'd you go? So this morning, we're going to talk about baskets of figs. And unlike the other lessons, the good news is Jeremiah, this is a true vision. This is not necessarily where he's got to go and do anything. As a matter of fact, Jeremiah is not being asked to buy, sell, or do anything. What he is being asked to do is to look, listen, and to answer a very few simple questions as God asks them. And well, he is presented with a basket of figs. Now, I'd like to let you know something. I understand the worship team came in and saw my empty baskets, and they were wondering where the figs were, and some people went looking for figs, and some people assumed I would buy Fig Newtons and bring them in here, because figs are expensive. Did y'all know this? And the idea of buying figs and letting them rot for what they cost, I don't think so. So remember, this is an object lesson, so we can substitute some object, and it can seem kind of fit. So instead of representing us by figs, we're going to represent us by bananas. And it just seems to fit us a lot better. So I don't have two baskets of figs. I have two baskets. You're not imagining it. I have two baskets of bananas. And we'll talk about these baskets in just a moment. But in Jeremiah's vision, they are placed in front of the temple. And this is important, because they're being placed in front of God. Not in front of man. Not in front of people. They are actually being placed in the one place Israel would have gotten this. They are being placed in the very presence of God to let God examine the bananas or the figs for Israel. So God's eyes are the ones that are on this. Now, one basket is full of good figs. So one basket, we have good bananas. Ooh, aren't they pretty? Nice and yellow. And just so you know, these bananas are either destined for a bowl of cereal or maybe a couple slices of bread with some peanut butter spread on them. But these bananas are going somewhere because they're good bananas. And then, well, the other was full of bad figs, or in this case, bad bananas. Can you tell which ones are which? This isn't a hard experiment, is it? I mean, that's kind of obvious. I mean, this one is black and it's smushy. And Rich informed me this morning that it might be good for a blender to make a milkshake. My mom tells me yesterday that these might be able to be cut up and made into a banana pudding, so maybe you could use them for something. But I just want to tell you, I don't think this is a very good cereal banana, and I'm certainly not going on my bread. And so we have these two things, and the funny thing is that God looks at Jeremiah, and he says, please see God's words are good, not evil. He didn't say, Jeremiah, tell me which ones are good and which ones are evil. You see, because that's looking at a core. That's looking down into somebody's heart. That's making yourself the judge. He's just asking Jeremiah a simple question. And that question is really simple. What do you see, Jeremiah? I just want you to walk over to the baskets, and I want you to look at the basket, and I want you to tell me what is it you see when you look at these baskets. And Jeremiah says, well, duh, I could play this game all day long. They're figs. And the good ones, man, they look delicious. Let's take them home and eat them. And the bad ones, they look disgusting, God. And they're not good to eat. See, this is quite simple. We've got two baskets here. And Jeremiah can do this. He can look at this. I want you to know something, that they were all figs, or in our case, they were all bananas. So everybody here is a banana this morning. Congratulations. And we're just one bunch of bananas in a couple of different baskets. That kind of fits us sometimes. We should have wore yellow. I should have put out an email. Everybody wear yellow today. We could all be a banana at that point. But do you know what the biggest difference between these two baskets are? 6 days. Here's what I mean by that. This basket, same grocery store, same brand, same price, was bought 6 days ago. These were bought this morning. The only difference between this basket and this basket is what? Time. That's it. This one's been laying around for a while, and this one is fresh. So we have fresh faith and spoiled faith. Oh, my goodness. That'll preach. That's a cool idea for a sermon. Jeremiah, thank you very much for the lesson. Because as he's looking at this, these baskets of figs, Jeremiah could just look at them and tell the good ones from the bad ones. And just like when I held them up, I didn't have to have him guess. You can look at them. He did not have to touch them. He did not have to taste them, thank goodness. He did not have to smell them. Now, I will be honest with you. I'm happy this sermon is over because these have been in a bag in my office for a week, and they were smelling kind of ripe. You can smell them if you get close to this basket. They have a smell to them. But Jeremiah didn't need to do that. Just by looking at these baskets, Jeremiah could tell there were good ones, and they were very good, and we are told they were ripe and ready. They were ready to be put into use. They were ready to serve. They were ready to do whatever needed to be done with them. You just had to wash them. I don't know, maybe they already washed. Maybe God washed them already. But they were ready to go. And then he says the bad ones, well, like the belt and the broken vase and the smushed up pot, these are useless. Not good for, okay. I've been told these could be used for something. I guess I should have bought them a week ago and let them get really nice and slimy, and then everybody would have got the point. But they're not useful. They're not something that you, when you went to the store and you were shopping for bananas, which ones would you pick? Would you buy these or these? Duh. Of course. I'm going for the ones that are yellow because bananas are supposed to be yellow. Now here's what I want you to see though. There were no okay ones. No in the middle. I love those Verizon commercials. We get a kick out of them. It's just not okay. It's not good enough. Would you want a surgeon that's okay? Would you want a tax provider, a tax preparer that's just okay? Nothing's supposed to just be okay. What do you want? You want good. You want the best. It's kind of funny, when we begin to talk about our faith, I don't want to be called this because this is rotten, and I'm not sure I want to be called this because this looks perfect. By the way, I made sure of it. Guess what? These nice, delicious-looking bananas, there ain't one of them in this bunch is perfect. They all have a few dents and a few scars and a little mark here and there, so they're not perfect. But oftentimes we think about, I can't be perfect, so I can't be in this basket. So I'll just kind of settle for okay. And God says, no. There's only two baskets. You're either in this one or you're in this one. And I don't know that I like that. I like a middle choice, right? I mean, I can be sometimes good and sometimes bad. But as Jeremiah is looking at these baskets, God doesn't give him a middle choice. He said, Jeremiah, what do you see? He says, I only see two baskets. I only see two choices. It's like a light switch, on or off. And so God then begins to say, well, let me tell you about these baskets. Because these good ones over here, I have some promises for them. And well, the good ones are the exiles from Judah that, well, they are the remnant of faith. They're the ones that are going to be brought back. And God says that my eyes will watch over you. And I will be there for their good. So God's going to watch over these people. And he says, you know what? I will bring you back to this land. That's important. All of this stuff that you're watching, all of these things that are falling apart, the destruction that's happening is not the end of your story, good bananas. Good bananas, there's another chapter, and I am promising you that when this chapter is done, you're going to have to go through this chapter. There is going to be heartache. You are going to watch your cities fall. You are going to watch your nation crumble. You are going to watch morality go away. You're going to watch all of these things. But bananas, if you will stay faithful to me and you will stay in this basket, I have a promise for you. I'll fix it at the end. It'll all be okay. He tells them, I will build them up and not tear them down. Now, keep in mind what's happening. Right now, they're watching armies come across. And Babylon had a habit. They wanted to make sure you got the point. They were in charge and you weren't. So not only did they conquer your city, not only did they drag you away into exile, before they drug you away, they would put you around the city that you had been defending, and they would burn it to the ground. And they would make you stand and watch and understand just how defeated you were, because they would burn your homes and your places of worship and your places of work and your markets and your fields, and they would burn it all to the ground. And God is saying, but understand, when this is all said and done, I'm here to build you up, not tear you down. God promises them, I will plant them and not uproot them. Well, they are about indeed going to be uprooted because they're going to be drug away to foreign lands. It was another one of those ideas Babylon had, that they would relocate you. Because you know what, as long as you're living in the land where you grew up, then you have some kind of loyalty to the land, and it would cause uprisings. If they put you in a place you didn't care about, then it was much less likely you'd want to fight for that place. So they would uproot you, but God is saying, you know what, in the long run, people, the big picture, I'm not here to rip you up. I'm going to plant you anew. And he tells them, I will give them a heart to know me, and that I am the Lord. Now we're going to get to the inside of the fruit. We're not just going to fix the outside. We're not going to fix the destruction. We're not going to just fix the things that are broken. I'm going to go to this heart, this sin issue. Remember the two sins? The fact that they had lost their heart for God? This ties all the way back to our God Box sermon at the beginning of the year. Remember, at the end of last year, remember the church in Ephesus? What was their problem? They had lost their love for Jesus. And he says, when this is all done, I am going to restore a people that have a heart for me, and they will be my people, and I will be their God. That sounds like a bunch of cool promises, right? In the middle of when you're watching your nation get eroded and you're losing territory and you're watching your villages burn and your soldiers killed and all of this is happening, to have God say, yes, it's going to happen. Yes, I see it's happening. But understand, this is not the end of your story. You would probably find great comfort in this. I've never lived in a war-torn, ravaged area before. Well, I have. I've just been a few hundred years late. Because this was an area of war a few hundred years ago, but not now. And so I've never really experienced war on a first-hand basis. I've seen it on television, watched Hollywood. But I imagine when you're living in a war-torn area, those promises really mean something to you. But I do live in a war-torn life, a life that oftentimes I feel is under siege. So I take great promise and focus in those ideas that God doesn't forget about his people. But since there are promises to the good basket, I hate to tell you this, there are also some promises made to the bad figs. And well, he says, I will deal with Zedekiah, king of Judah, his officials, and the survivors from Jerusalem. I want you to pay close attention to this. Where does God start dealing? At the top. The leaders get held to a higher accountability. So if you're a leader and you're leading people astray, then understand God sees it. And he says, I'm going to hold the king, the guy at the top, and then I'm going to hold the officials and the people that should have been looking after this and made sure this never happened. I'm going to hold them accountable, and then I'm going to go work on the hearts of the people, and I'm going to hold the people that walked away from me accountable. Now, ultimately, everybody's accountable for their own actions. But if you take a role of leadership, understand you've taken something very powerful in God's eyes. And God holds you up to a standard. And he says, you know what? You're more accountable. You'll get to the front of the line, but it just may not be the front of the line that you want to be the front of the line at. Because God said, you know what? If you take leadership roles, you're responsible for all those people that I give you to lead. Okay, all the leaders just quit, but that's just the way it works. God says that we're not supposed to seek leadership for the idea of just getting a title. It's always about the people. Then he says, I will make them abhorrent. And I had to go look this up. And then I understood it as soon as I saw the black banana, because what it means is inspiring disgust, loathing, or repugnant. I look at that banana and I don't go, yummy. I go, that's disgusting. And I left it sitting there another week, it'd be even more disgusting because it's not designed to just sit there. It says, I will banish them. That's to send someone away from a country or a place and punish them. Now, there's a big difference in that word. God's not disciplining these people. You know the difference, right? When I discipline someone, my goal is to get you back onto track. This basket has reached the point that God is not disciplining them. The word there he used is punishment, which means that you're going to pay for the crimes that you've committed. He's not trying to rehabilitate these bananas. He is actually punishing Israel for walking away from him. Man, that's a lot. But he's not done. I will send a sword and famine and plagues against them until they are destroyed. God's not going to give up. After he sends them away, he's still not done. He's going to hunt them down to the ends of the earth and make sure they understand, you walked away from me. Somehow I don't think I want to be in this basket. This doesn't sound like a happy place. I mean, maybe you can do whatever you want in that basket, but this basket has an ending point. And the thing is, well, Jesus must have read Jeremiah. I'm sure he did. Maybe he dictated it to him. I don't know. Maybe he's the one that showed him the basket of figs. But he preaches a sermon or tells a story very, very, very similar to this. But this is not to the nation of Israel. This one is to the church. And this is what it reads in Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 through 50. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore, and they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, and threw the bad ones away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into a blazing furnace. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, when we listen to Jesus tell the story, the first thing you got to pick up on, and I hope your antennas went up because we've talked about this, this is a kingdom of heaven parable. And kingdom of heaven does not mean heaven. It does not mean the resting place that I go when I die. We're not talking about heaven. The kingdom of heaven is in the here and now and extends into heaven. He is talking about, this is what the church is supposed to look like. This is what the church is supposed to be. This is what the church is supposed to be doing. And so he compared it to a large net that brings in many fish. So he's got this big net, and he's out there, and it's just dropped down. It's like the scene from Nemo. By the way, I resisted a lot of choices here that I could have used for our sermon introduction. I could have used the Chiquita Banana song. We could have had the net song. We could have had all of this. But he sees it as this large net that has just come down. And you know what? It's not like fishing like Dean and some of the other people here do, where you go out and you're trying to catch that one fish. They just drop it, and anything that swims by the net, they suck it on in. And well, in that net, just like these bananas, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Notice the net doesn't care, does it? What does the net collect? All of them. Well, wait a minute. If the church is supposed to be the net, does that mean we're supposed to be collecting the ones that I like and the ones that I don't like? The ones that I believe, that believe the way I do, and the ones that don't? The ones that are trying to live for God and the ones that aren't? All of them? Yeah. See, like the figs, you can tell them apart. I mean, they didn't have to do very much to examine them. Like the figs, there was a different destination for each of them. The good ones were kept, and the bad ones were destroyed. Now, you're out of blanks on purpose, but we're not done. You can put your pens down and give me your attention, because here is the lesson that we need to take out of this for the church. And this is a very hard point, because we don't like this lesson. You see, we're not supposed to be the judge. In this wonderful parable that Jesus told, we don't decide who's a bad banana and who's a good banana. We don't get to pick who's the bad fig and who's the good fig. We are not the judge. What did Jesus say? The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous. Not me. Trust me, I'm no angel. Don't have wings, don't have a halo. Not my job. I am not here to judge good from bad. It's not my place. We're the net. We're just the collecting point. This is what Jesus saw. Jesus didn't say, and the church is like the angels that decide who's good and who's bad. He says, you're just the net. You're just the point. You're supposed to get them all. I don't care what they believe. Bring them all in. And then teach them show them. Let them decide what basket they want to get into. And then we'll sort it all out at the end. Church, you have but one job, and that is to share the message. You see, sometimes I think the church got the idea that we're supposed to be the sin police. I'm supposed to keep track of what you're doing right and wrong and keep some little book of good and bad. You know, grade you on the curve. Well, you're doing okay because really there are a lot of people doing worse than you and there aren't very many doing better, so we'll give you like... We're not the sin police. You know what else? I'm also not your moral compass. We got this idea that somehow the church is supposed to be preaching morality. No, if preaching morality worked, we could have stopped with the Ten Commandments. If preaching morality worked, we don't need Jesus. Right? I mean, if I could preach you into being a good person, then we would not need this. But see, we're not supposed to be the morality police. We're not the compass for that. We're supposed to be the Jesus compass. I'm simply supposed to be pointing you to who Jesus is. That changes everything in the church. That changes everything. Because, interesting, Jesus did not look at this idea. This is a collecting point. He said, both good and bad are going to end up in the net. We're going to have believer and non-believer sitting in the pews of the church side by side. Go figure that one out. There are going to be believers and non-believers whose names end up on a church roll book because we established some way to come forward and join the church. And so we want to do that. But you do understand, that's why I can't be the judge. Because as soon as I make myself the judge, then guess what? I have to make up the judgment rules. So God says, you know what? Don't worry about being the judge. You be the collecting point. And then you teach them. You listen to the Great Commission. It never has the word judgment. It says what? Go into all the nations. Teach them. Show them. Baptize them. But it doesn't say judge them. Show them which way they're supposed to go, and then we'll work from there. And you know, it's not described as good, bad, who is us. We're not described that way. See, we're not described. We don't get to decide who goes where and when. The other thing you need to know, this is an end-time parable. The net is collecting right now. We're not done collecting right now. It says the angels will come and celebrate, will come out and celebrate. This is how it will be at the end of the age, not now. This is something that we have to worry about in the future as far as deciding good from evil, good from bad. Right now, we're all just bananas. As a matter of fact, if you're still sucking air today, you have a choice which basket you want to be in. It's your choice, not mine. I don't get to put you in a basket. Like when God spoke to Jeremiah, this event was going to come into the future. So this idea of judgment was coming in the future, not the here and now, because when we get focused on the judgment, then you know what? We start to push people away. I start looking at it and saying, well, you know what? Your life is kind of black and greasy, and I don't want black and greasy over in my nice, clean, shiny bananas. And so we take the black and greasy bananas, and we say, throw them out of the church so that we can have our church looking all nice and shiny. And so we want to do the separate now. The truth is, until that time, again, the church is just a collecting point for fish. And what that means to us is, well, the doors of the church are open to anybody that chooses to walk through them. I don't care what color, age, what your belief system was before you got here. How you got here is unimportant to God. If you walk through the doors, anybody that walks through our doors, we have a responsibility to minister to them. That little vision statement that we put out there about meeting people where they are, anybody that comes into our field, we have a responsibility to meet that person right where they are and work with them from there. And I want to tell you something, that's hard. Because I like my bananas separate. I don't want my good and bad mixed together. I want to put them in two separate baskets. And God said, for right now, church, it's all one basket for you guys. Treat them all like they're good. Teach them all about Jesus. Tell them all about the plan of salvation. Give them all a chance to make their choice. See, because God makes some promises to these fish. These are hard promises. It says they sat down and collected the good fish in the baskets. So the ones that they were at the end of the age, and we're at the point of where God is back, and the angels are there deciding the good from the bad at that point. And it says, you know what? The good ones were collected, and they were put over in these baskets. And in Jesus' story, the bad ones didn't even get a basket. They just kind of had an open pit fire, and they were just throwing them in there and saying, you know what? Now it matters. See, there is a point at which it will matter which basket you're in. And it matters today. It does. Because we don't know how much longer that net's going to be collecting and when God's going to pull it all up. The Bible says today is the day of salvation. When Jesus finished this this story, I find it interesting. He looked at the disciples. He says, now, I've told you this wonderful story about this net. Do you understand? And they all said, yes, Jesus, we understand. I got a feeling they were like, yes, Jesus, I understand. And then when Jesus left, they were like, Peter, did you get that? Did you get a blank that I missed? What was he trying to say, that we're supposed to go fishing again? I need to make a bigger net? I don't think they got it. I don't. I don't think they totally got it, because the disciples had their problems with judgment too. But they did not totally get it, but you know what? They get it now. They understand, because everybody that heard this lesson the first time is no longer on planet Earth, and they understand. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. I never get tired of that verse. They understand. The question is, do you understand? See, it doesn't matter whether Peter, James, John, Andrew, whether they got it or not, at least not in our perspective. Do you get it? And there's two things that you need to get. Thing number one you need to get. There are indeed two baskets. There is a basket that is, quote, good, and there is a basket that is, quote, bad. I didn't make up the rules of the game. I didn't. I'm just telling you the story as it was told to me. There are indeed two baskets. Now, here's the cool thing. Could I, Barry, ever take this and make it good again and where it would be back over here? If you're waiting for that, you're waiting for a miracle that I don't have the power to do. This is, from my perspective, this is what it is, and I can't make it this. But you know what? I know somebody that can. His name is Jesus. He said, I can take your busted, broken, rotten, warped heart, and I can make this this. I can take you out of this basket and into this basket, but you have to choose me. You see, right now we're not choosing baskets, we're choosing path. Are we choosing Jesus or not? So today you have a choice. Which path do you want to follow? To which basket are you going to end up? Your choice. That's lesson number one. If you're here today, you've never accepted Christ, the Bible says today is your day of salvation. Choose a basket. If you already made that decision, then you understand these baskets mean something much different, because what is our goal? Our goal is to get as many of these out of here and put them over here by introducing them to Jesus. I'm not here to tell them that they're sinners. They already got that figured out all by themselves. What I am here to do is to tell them how to overcome the condition, and that is go from this basket to this basket. And that's passing them through the life of Christ. Man, that's a big mission for us, isn't it? That may take me a lifetime to do. Exactly. That's why you're left here. If it was all about ending up in the right basket, you get baptized, God would just take a little string and just jerk you on up to heaven. You'd be done. You're here to use your life to move from one basket to the other. You're here not to judge. You know what? Because we might find some that we think are in this basket, and they really are over here. Not my job. I got a simple job. His name is Jesus. So this morning I want to ask yourself, first of all, what basket are you in? Second question, what are you doing to keep as many people out of this basket as you possibly can. Deep questions from the book of Jeremiah.